Welcome to Obuleti Oromo Women's Network monthly webinar and podcast. Our conversations are based on topics and issues that are prevalent in the Oromo community, especially pertaining to women. The podcasts are based on recorded monthly webinars led by leaders in our community. These podcasts are meant to attend to the education component of Obuleti's mission. If you're interested in learning more, please contact us via our website, email, and or social media networks. Webinar resources can be found on our website at obuleti.org/webinars.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Obuleti's webinar on college success, part two, where we'll be discussing applying to college. Today, we have some good folks with us. We're just going to go around real quick and introduce ourselves. My name is Jalani. I'm in Portland, Oregon, and I work as Obuleti's internal director. Howie, would you like to go next?
Sure. My name is Howie Wako. I currently live in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I am Obuleti's external director.
And my name is Jali. I live in Minnesota, and I'm Obuleti's mentorship program coordinator.
I am Sion Gudeya. I live in Chicago, and I am the social media coordinator.
Okay, thank you, everybody. So I thought it'd be nice to kind of start off talking about some of the most common questions people might have. Sion, you had prepared kind of like a most common questions list from your experience when you applied to college last year.
Okay. Well, the SAT and ACT like comes before a lot of the stuff that comes for college before college admissions, because students start taking it junior year, and so the preparation starts way before college admissions process. So some general information about SAT and ACT, I'm going to read this off of my notes, so just excuse me there. But this general stuff you can find online, but you know, there's like some tips that you won't find online, and I guess like some tips that I've learned along the way. But some general information, SAT and AC versus ACT, so both of them generally cover the same topics. Both are used in the college admissions decision and scholarships, and most colleges don't mind which one you take, but be sure to check if they want you to take a certain test. So some colleges are specific about which tests you take, and there's not much of a difference. And the ACT, there's a science section. That's what's mostly the difference between them. So the SAT is composed of reading, writing, and math, and an additional optional essay section that you can do if you want, but you can also opt out of it. But it's 3 hours long, and with the essay, it's gonna be 50 minutes longer. And the scoring is a little bit different, but you can find a chart that shows online that shows the scores and how they compare with each other if you take an SAT and ACT. So SAT ranges from 400 to 1600, and the ACT ranges from 1 to 36. And then lastly, the ACT is 2 hours and 55 minutes long, but with the essay, it's 3 hours and 40 minutes. Just the general tips that I thought would be helpful was take both tests. Like you don't know which one works best for you. I feel like some people score better on one test and than another test. So just, I think taking both tests is a pretty good thing to do. And also take it a few times, I think. Maybe you have a good score on the first time, but just take it a few times just to see. But if you don't want to, that's fine too. If you're happy with your first score, that's great. But it changes from time to time. And obviously, you can take it the first time and then prepare for it and then take it a second time to see if your preparation is paying off or if you're just wasting your time, because honestly, you don't want to be wasting your time. And then also check the college requirements for the scores, just so you're not like surprised when you're applying and they want this type, this score. So just make sure to just check the requirements. Some resources, honestly, online, you can find them, but it's really hard to, I found it really hard to stay committed to a study routine for the SAT and ACT. But Khan Academy really helps. They have like a whole section on SAT and ACT. So you have to be really just committed if like maybe you set a goal for yourself and then and also be realistic with it. Maybe set your own study time, like 30 minutes four times a week or something. And start studying during the summer of sophomore year. Some people do that, or, you know, just before, like a few months before the tests actually take place. So those are some of the things I have to say about these tests. They're not the only thing that go into the college admissions process, and colleges don't only see the tests and scores, but they are definitely a very important factor in getting into the colleges you're looking for. And also some colleges don't even require you to take a test. So check on those. Yeah, so just check on the requirement for that. That is all.
And did you use any resources specifically? You said Khan Academy, that's an online video kind of tutorial on a lot of topics. But did you use any books from the library or?
I had the Kaplan book, the 2017 one, but there's a lot more. There's like all of these, there's Princeton Review and some other reviews and stuff. I had the book for Kaplan and I didn't end up using all of it. So I thought that was a waste of money, but if I had used all of it, I mean, I thought it's pretty good. It has like practice tests that you can take. You can also take practice tests online. That just brought up the whole taking practice tests. You can take practice tests in these books or online, and that's a good way to prepare for them.
Where did you find those online practice tests?
So the practice tests that I took were on the Kaplan book that I got. It gave you like three practice tests, and that's how I took them, but I'm pretty sure you can find them online.
Okay, thank you. That was very informative. Jolly is going to be talking about the college search, which is kind of like the next step, because Sion talked about how ACT, SAT requirements really vary by school. So Jolly, can you kind of help us through how to find that college and making that list of places to apply to?
Yeah, I can. So basically, this is kind of just like a combination of personal experience and then my encounters with different people in college, and then a combination of resources that I've looked at online and just some research I've done before the webinar. And it's a really broad topic because, you know, there's so many, a lot of people feel like overwhelmed and kind of lost when it comes to like knowing where to go. It's kind of like a pressuring thing, because as soon as people get to like that point, they get a lot of questions and a lot of pressure without really being provided with resources. A lot of the things that I looked at and that I've discussed with people is that a lot of people don't know that visiting colleges is as useful as it is. Like, for example, some colleges actually let you spend the night in a dorm, experience like a whole day of or a day or two of what it'd be like to be on that campus. And that's what a lot of people who have experienced it say that they get the most information out of. Because for whatever reason, we tend to lean towards colleges that we either get encouraged by or that our friends are going to or that we know people who went there. But one thing that we don't really realize is everybody's experience isn't the same. So to be able to have a free opportunity to experience something that you might have to pay for a long term is a really good opportunity to take advantage of. Another thing is, without doing visits, you can also contact the admissions offices, the financial aid offices, and ask them like really personal, detailed questions about what they offer. And like things that are very specific to your circumstance. Sometimes they'll even book appointments with you or do meetings ahead of time to discuss things like very specific questions that you have and things that pertain to your needs. A lot of people think that if you're not a student, that you're not able to do those things, but you are. And another one, I'm just naming off just the basics, like main things that are the most common things that would be the most useful. But yeah, another thing is to make sure that you think long-term, when you're choosing a place, because in some situations, people just get like a scholarship, are told about what scholarships and stuff that they can get like freshman year. And sometimes people are in situations where they come to like their junior year and the packages that they got like financially doesn't really apply anymore. So they're in a different place than they imagined. So it's important to explore and get details about the type of financial aid that the school is offering. Sometimes because everything is so new, you don't really take time to like look at the details. So just making sure that what you're offered is clear as far as your whole college experience and not just when you're first going into it. And lastly, knowing about what like connections colleges have with each other. Sometimes for people who want to go to community college first or for people who want to go to smaller schools first, there's a way to make sure that you're still getting some of the resources and some of the experience you would get at a bigger school because they have connections within their programs. That's important just for the sake of how things are going to be once you graduate. Making sure that you're not having less of a experience and opportunities because you went to a smaller school. So it's nice to have that sister program connection. And yeah, that's basically some of the main points that I would say to look into when searching colleges.
And how did you create your list of potential colleges to apply to? Like what were, like you kind of went through some most common or most useful things, but what went into making your list?
For me personally, or the one that I just
went mm-hmm. For you personally?
A lot of the things that I was looking into after I moved back to Minnesota was like convenience. Well, price was a big thing because I started off going to a private school, an HBCU, that was really far away from home. So it wasn't an option to live at home. It was in a different state, so I wasn't getting in-state grants. And so once I moved back to Minnesota, I took some classes at community college because I knew that that'd be the most financially smart thing to do just because of my experience those first couple of semesters, I mean. And then I knew that if I went to the U of M, it'd be much cheaper. It's a public school. It's like inner city, so there's a lot of convenience as far as like transportation, jobs, and things like that. So I guess my like four main things that I mentioned kind of relate to my personal experience throughout the years.
Does anybody else want to also join in and kind of talk about how you guys created your own college list?
Hi, so I finally figured out how to use this. My mic was off. My name is Bharti. I currently go to a state university in Minnesota. So for me, like, when I first started, like, I wanted to just, like, find somewhere. I was a biochem major originally, so I was looking for somewhere where I could do pre-pharmacy and, like, ideally, just being the oldest daughter and with all the responsibilities, I just wanted to run away and find somewhere as far as possible from home. But unfortunately, that didn't work out because my family were like, I don't know how to say it, but they're basically like, oh, like, if you really go far away, like, you know, they're just scaring me. And like, I didn't want all that cursing and all that in my life. So I just chose to like go to a community college, which I don't regret because my same friends who went to where I was originally going to go to are like diving in loans, and I just have loans from community college, which is much better. And yeah, so my choices, I guess, ended up just being ideally like, I really just enjoyed being in community college and saving money. So I just pursued that for a while. And then now it's my second year at Metro State. So inshallah, like God willing, next semester will be my last semester, hopefully, if I take a lot of credits. But basically, like, long story short, I think it's very important to find something where you can afford it. Like, go for it if, like, you know, like, I wish even for now, like, for where I'm attending now, I would have known more about, like, opportunities such as scholarships and stuff like that, because you save so much more money, and even outside scholarships. But like, especially the outside ones, I always feel unmotivated because I always think, like, who am I in the midst of all those people to get it? But it's really possible. So just make sure that, like, you know, like you all were saying, like, you look at the opportunities that are open and take them, because, like, you know, it's not going to come to you unless you go looking for it. So just basically keeping your eyes open and being smart about, like, every move you make, because you don't want to be, like, diving in loans and just like hating why you even went to school. So yeah, that's the big thing, and find connections and open your eyes and just be aware. So yeah, that's all.
Thank you. Anybody else want to add?
So yeah, you mentioned the scholarships and stuff and taking the opportunities that come your way. Like, honestly, I regret not searching for scholarships more and applying for them. But I think that, like, going to your counselor and asking them which scholarships that you can apply to and what you're eligible for, that's something that I wish I would have done more, when I was in high school. And even now, I'm waiting for my semester grades to come in so I can start applying to these scholarships. So yeah, just taking the opportunities that are, like, there, you know, that's something I would say. Yeah.
Thank you. I know for me personally, when I was doing the college search, I think it was when I took either AP, the AP exams, like the advanced placement exams, or the SAT, one of them put me in a weird situation where I guess I clicked on allowing colleges to send me brochures and stuff. So come my senior year, I got so many brochures from so many colleges, and I didn't even realize, like, some of them were from all over the country. And I started getting really, you know, confused because I was like, oh my gosh, like, how do you choose? So when it came to me kind of like narrowing down like my college search, it really came down to whether or not I wanted to be in state, out of state, and if I wanted to be out of state, could I afford it? So kind of like everybody was saying, you have a dream to go away from home, to do things, to kind of be independent, but you'd also want to be financially wise. So at the end of the day, when I made my decision, I made it leaning towards finances and leaning towards being closer to the family, because I felt like in case of an emergency, you know, I want to be close to home, but also in just wanting to be able to come home whenever I wanted to. I was like 40 minutes away from where my family lived, but without a car, the distance was like being out of state for me, because I rarely visited home after, you know, the first semester and homesickness went away. So that was a really nice added bonus to choosing the school that I did. But I do know that when I initially applied to schools, I applied to lots and lots of schools because I wanted to give myself the option. And then once reality kind of hit in, as I looked at finances and looked at, you know, the cost of having to travel back home and all those things, then I kind of narrowed it down to in-state and then the college that I ended up going to. That's how I made my search, kind of like did it first by dreams, whatever I dreamed of, and then slowly reality of can I afford this? Will I be too far away? And all these other factors. So that's how I did my college search. Anybody else want to add before we move on?
Yeah, so the way I did my college search was looking at universities where I wanted to be a doctor initially. So I was looking up universities that had really high rankings in terms of my area of study. And not necessarily close to home. I really wanted to go out of state. I applied to really rigorous schools, but then I had backups in terms of schools that were within Oregon, because that's where I went to high school. And I only applied to backups because my family was against me going out of state also. But I really wanted to leave, but I ultimately ended up staying. I'm really glad I did my backup schools, because if you are going to school in the state and like there's a really good school, your chances of getting accepted are higher than those that are applying from out of state. They don't require as many things. Your GPA, typically if you have a 3.5 or above and you have good SAT scores, you're automatically admitted. And so that was the case for me. And then I had a scholarship that that covered all of my expenses throughout college. So that even convinced me more. However, it was 2 hours from home, which made it okay for me because it was like, okay, that's enough of a distance. And I found throughout college that it was enough. It was just about right. But I did need to go home often. And I love the convenience of being able to go and see my family whenever I wanted to or not. I love that. I loved having that option. And I think another thing that solidified my decision to stay was just the connections that I had made with my family, extended family, as well as friends. I really wanted to stay close to them and make those connections more stronger. So that was also something that went into play when I was making my decision.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, you brought up some good points of dream schools, backup schools, and making that something to look into. I'm going to be talking about next on personal statements. I feel like that's kind of a more natural transition. Once you have your college list, then you want to talk about now. Okay, so applications. One of the big things when it comes to applications is personal statement. When I did my personal statement, it was definitely something that was daunting because some of them give you prompts, some of them are just tell us about yourself. But I found some articles kind of researching for what I was going to say today that kind of summarize how I went about my personal statement writing and things that I found really helpful. So one of the articles was through FastWeb, and it kind of says like, you know, 4 tips or tricks or whatever on writing your personal statement, which I think is really helpful. And so the first one they said was to just pick a topic that you're passionate about, which obviously makes it much more of an interesting piece to read, especially if you're an admissions person, you're reading through thousands and thousands of essays and you're just like, okay, you want to make sure that when you're writing about something that you're passionate about. So that could be something that's like a moment of personal growth for you, a difficulty that you've, you know, overcome, a strength of yours, something that gave you confidence, just a personal experience that you could really, that's different from other people. So it's different things for different people. I know for myself, being someone that wasn't born in state, but not really remembering back home, but knowing enough from listening to my parents and listening to my siblings that I had an interesting story of how I was raised and how that kind of affects me growing up here in America. So I wrote about the immigration process, my hopes and dreams of being someone that's, you know, growing up here in America and the change that I want to make in the future as a result of the things that my family experienced in the past. So I kind of stuck to that kind of storyline because that's unique and interesting to myself. But some people will just do emotional hardship, physical hardship. If you're an athlete, maybe your experiences as a minority, maybe you're applying to college and you're not someone that, you know, came right out of high school. So you could even talk about applying to college as a non-traditional student and why you're doing it later in life. So there's definitely lots of standpoints that you can kind of use to approach your essay. And then the other tip is engage your reader from the first sentence. So that's the first thing that they're going to see when they start your essay. So you want to make it interesting. Don't ever make it like the most challenging / important / difficult moment in my life has been, like, that's boring. That's not going to catch them. Usually you'll lose them. So make it like a kind of like a story, like a little tidbit in the beginning that kind of captures their attention, some kind of detail, whatever it is. But just don't do those very big intro sentences that just makes it sound like everything else that they've ever read. And then another tip was ask yourself, so what? Meaning, you know, as with any good essay, you should at least spend a paragraph explaining why you've chosen to talk about what you chose to talk about. So for myself, if I spent my first paragraph talking about, you know, some experience my family had back home, then I need to convey in the other part of my essay or personal statement why that was important, how that shaped me as a person, as someone that's applying to the school, as someone that has these goals, like what was the impact? Why was that important? So make sure that you're explaining, letting the essay explain itself, I guess. And then the fourth tip is reading your essay out loud, but also having other eyes on it. So that's a big deal because you're writing to get admitted into school and your personal statement is a big aspect of that. And I know that it can be uncomfortable having people read your essay. That's something that I had to overcome because the reality of it is whether it's a personal statement or for a college that you're applying to or a scholarship you're applying to, you want to make sure that you're putting your best self forward and there are things that people can help you with. Sometimes people can see ideas that you kind of didn't convey that well, or you had grammar mistakes or spelling mistakes that other people can catch. So the more eyes that you can have on it, the better. So I went to people that knew me really well, but I also went to English teachers or other teachers that kind of could understand where I was coming from in my story because I've talked about it with them and they kind of helped me get ideas and just correcting those little things that it's hard for you to catch sometimes. So yeah, so those are some tips and tricks. Like I said, you could find the articles all over the internet in order to kind of help you. But at the end of the day, you just kind of have to start writing something and then edit it and keep editing it until it's what you want it to be, because sometimes the hardest part is just starting. So I encourage you to just mess around, write something, and see what happens. I think that's as far as I have on personal statement. Did anybody want to add on what you guys did for your personal statement, maybe?
So what I would add to personal statements is to ask your parents and other family members of the, not necessarily trauma, but the experiences that you went through as a child, and what or how you were able to overcome the negative aspects of your life. For example, when I, in my personal statement, I talked about the immigration process back home, but I emphasized like the lack of healthcare back home and how much it affected me, but I personally didn't know that. For example, I had yellow fever as a child, but that's not something that I would know. It's something that my extended family or my immediate family would know. So asking them for details like that is really important because it shows your ability to be resilient and to overcome. And your essays are not necessarily about people sympathizing with you, but to show them like, here are all these struggles that I went through, but also here's how I overcame them. Here's how I am persistent. Here's how adversity impacts me and why I am a good enough candidate for your school. So emphasizing the issue, but also emphasizing more how you overcame it, that will make your statement that much better. And I also found like incorporating Afan Oromo into personal statements makes, it gets people's attention. They're like, oh, I wonder what that means. Obviously you have to define it for them down the road somewhere in your personal statement. But including it in there always, like people always ask me, what does that mean? And how does that fit into your culture? And I think I would also add being, I know that when you're graduating from high school, it's hard to say that this is exactly what I want to do. But try to be as clear as you can in terms of like what you do want to do and what steps you foresee that you need to take in order to get there. Those are really, really, really helpful. But that's all I have. Do other people have anything else?
Those are really good tips. Like, I wish I had those when I was writing my essay. Oh my God. Wow. That's really good. So, like, one of my teachers was telling me about being too general when you're writing the essays is not a good thing, even though, like, I guess for me, writing about coming here and stuff, that was a general thing. So I had to focus on, like, a specific event or, like, part of it that impacted me the most or impacted my future or the way I am. Like, something small or something that is so, like, it's detailed so that you can talk about it in detail. Did that make sense? But yeah, basically not being too general when you're writing the essay.
Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else want to add on college personal statements? Okay, well, we can move on then.
I read something really interesting about how there's a lot of misconceptions about how to what to like add into your personal statement. Like, for example, a lot of people think that just because you volunteer, that's going to be like some points and to add on your personal statements, but actually like colleges want to see something that stands out, and they know that volunteering is kind of like a requirement. So if you really want to look like you're passionate or like you look like you want to look like you're like dedicated, what really would be more like efficient is to maybe say that you like started some kind of like volunteer organization or like a campaign or something that's a little bit more geared around like, I didn't just do this because I had to and because I was told it looks good, but I actually am like dedicated and passionate about something. Which I thought was really interesting because little things like that are kind of like possible to do because like volunteering is so easy and it really just takes like a group of friends, people with the same mentality to start stuff. And another interesting thing that I learned was that just because you did like extracurricular activities and stuff like that, like that doesn't really mean much, especially when you're told, especially those that are like those that like grasp people's attention by saying, hey, come join this, it's gonna look good on your college, this and that. Because like, for example, people would go to like leadership seminars or something like that, and they really think, wow, I should add this in there. But from a college perspective, they're like, yeah, it's nice that you went there, but that was just a weekend out of your life, or like a week out of your life, some trip you went to or some conference you went to. But they want to see that you've been like committed to something. So I thought those were really interesting tips that could be kept in mind for anyone who's doing personal statements, or even if it's for like a scholarship or something.
Yeah, thank you. I would add to that, like, even if you didn't start an organization or a campaign or something like that, you could always do something that you could always write about how, you know, a particular moment in your volunteer experience might have helped shape your career goals. Yeah. Or taught you something about yourself. So instead of just generally talking about it, make it specific, make it a meaningful detail that you want to add. So that's a way to kind of twist it to make it more interesting. Did anybody else want to add anything before we move to the next topic?
Our teachers, they had us read some essays, some college essays that were, I guess, good. So maybe reading other essays can also be helpful when you're thinking about your own essay. But I don't know, that might be different for everybody.
Yeah, just some inspiration. Okay, well, thank you. Howie, did you want to talk about letters of recommendation now?
Okay, so letters of recommendation. I think maybe when I was in high school, I didn't realize the true impact of letters of recommendation. But recently, I am actually on a review board for master's students into our counseling psychology program. And letters of recommendations make or break your application. You want to have solid letters of rec from people who know you well. And even if they don't know you well, but people who can speak to your work ethic, your ability to excel in the classroom, or outside of the classroom. So people who have a comprehensive knowledge of who you are as an individual. And I know when we're in high school, our professional networks are really limited, but you have your teachers, your extracurricular coaches or supervisors or even work supervisors that you have. Those are key. When you ask them for a letter of recommendation, you want to provide them with, obviously, who you are, letting them know that the deadlines for letters of rec, like if it's due March 15th, you want to tell them that it's actually due March 1st, just to give yourself and them as well, just some room in case they're not able to get it done. Just something that's there so that they're able to have that flexibility. And then when you're asking for a letter of rec, the recommended time that you give teachers is about a month. So the closer you push the deadline to when your actual letter of recommendation is due, the less likely that your recommendation is going to be solid. So ask them 1 month ahead of time. And when you're asking them, of course, you're asking them to provide you with kind of not personal, but professional. Here is what you do well. Here is the things that you excel the most at. And even before you ask them to write that letter of rec, ask them, is that something they feel comfortable doing? Don't just make assumptions. Some people might say no simply because they might not trust their writing ability or whatever the case might be. So ask them ahead of time. I was reviewing, like I said, I'm on a review board, and I was reviewing one, and somebody wrote a negative letter of recommendation, and that was weighed heavily on this individual's application. So you don't want somebody that doesn't want to write you a letter of rec, or somebody who you haven't built solid rapport with. Other things is when you're asking for a letter of recommendation, provide them with your resume. And if you don't have a resume at this point, it's totally fine. You're still in high school. But a list of things that you have completed. It could be personal, professional, volunteer activities outside of school, whether it be sports, arts, music, whatever the case it might be. Make sure you include that in there. Also include hardships that you've overcome. Like I said before, the ability to overcome adversity is highly looked on as something that is positive. So again, talk about all those things, include all those things. And if you don't feel like writing, schedule a time to sit down with them and let them know, like, here's hardships that I went through throughout my entire high school career. Here's how I overcame them. Here are, if you're talking to teachers and you got, for example, like an A, you can choose, it doesn't matter which teacher, but obviously you want classes that you did really well in or classes that you struggled in. Say initially you had an F in the class, but by the end of the semester you had an A in the class. Talk about how that transition occurred, or how you changed, I guess, your grade throughout time. It shows your ability again to really work hard and your determination. Don't ask teachers that, you know, you're just personally cool with. Ask people who could really speak to your ability to work hard. And then I think another thing is pick teachers or adults in your life who are excited to write you a letter of recommendation, not just somebody random or somebody that, you know, doesn't really care. They're not going to put in that much effort. Their letter of rec might not be that detailed. So pick somebody who's excited to write about you, and somebody that wants to see you succeed. My letter of recommendation, I know into my current program of study, was literally the thing that got me in. This individual is highly respected in the field. They know me personally well, and they know my work ethic. And it was the thing that I was asked about during interviews was, how do you know this person? Like, why did they write you a letter of recommendation? Extremely important. So don't downplay your letters of rec. And then something that I saw online was that you should waive your rights to view your recommendations. You can do that, but I personally ask all my letter writers, can I review my letter of recommendation either before or after is submitted, just to have for your own personal file and to use again in the future, and ask them again, is that acceptable? I had one letter of recommendation in when I was an undergrad who I have used over and over again with their permission, obviously, because I loved it so much and it speaks so well to who I am that I love to reuse it. And so you're able to reuse your letters of rec for certain things that you apply for, because there's a lot of things that letters of recs are required. And then I would say, make sure again, the deadlines, that you're aware of them, because they're really important. You don't want people to submit right on the day of your letter of recommendation. It could be sometimes, I know now there's like online platforms, but when I was in college or in high school, they had us mailing things in. And if that system is still in place, you want to give them at least a week to get there, so that on the date of your application, all materials that you need in order for admission is already there. Some schools are not even going to allow you to move forward in the process if all of your materials are not there. They're reviewing tons of students. So important to get those in on time. And then once your letter writers have completed the letters of recommendation for you, write thank you letters to all of them, and extremely important for future professional development.
you might run into encounters throughout college where you're going to need somebody to write you a letter of recommendation because you're applying for school or other opportunities or internships or even scholarships. You want to make sure you're continuing to have those relationships, especially now in a time and age where email and text messaging and social media is available and easy accessible. Handwritten letters of recommendations go, thank you notes go a really long way. So just reassuring them and letting them know that you really appreciate the time that they put into writing those letters of recommendations. I've wrote a few and they just take a really long time. Not because the person doesn't know what to say, but because they're like thinking of all the things that they could say and how to put it in a way that really speaks to that student's ability. But yeah, those are all the things that I have. Does anybody else have additional feedback? Okay. All right. So FAFSA is kind of fun. It's a great time. I'm kidding. So FAFSA is, it could be a pain or it could be something that's really easy. Obviously, it's not something that makes or breaks your application to school. If you don't fill it out, it just means that you're going to be paying out of pocket. But considering that most of us are first generation college students, FAFSA is extremely important to us. I think the first thing I want to start by saying is that applications for FAFSA enrollment begins October 1st. So it used to be January 1st. But I remember when I was an undergrad, I used to wait, like literally January 1st came, my application was submitted. And that is because the sooner you submit your application, the better your chances of getting application or funds are. So the sooner you do it, the better. And a lot of people don't know that it's due in October. Now it just changed, I think, like 2 years ago. But be mindful of when FAFSA is due and get that in time. The sooner, again, the better. So I have a list of some things that are required in order to submit it. It could be really stressful, I'm sure, because I used to stress over doing it without any help. But hopefully you all have support. And if you don't, please reach out to Obolete, email us or reach out to us on social media networks. And we'll try to get back to you as soon as possible in terms of helping you and aiding you go through the process. So before you even fill out your FAFSA application, there are several things that you're going to need. It's going to be your social security card, your driver's license or ID card, and then an alien registration or citizenship number. And those are for those of you who might not be U.S. citizens yet. And then once you have actually submitted your FAFSA application, I know for me that certain schools would ask for my proof of citizenship because I was not born in the United States. So they're constantly asking those things. So just having that on file and with you when you're off in school is really helpful. And then something you're going to need is your most recent federal tax income returns. But because you're going to be a dependent, which means your parents are filing you on your taxes, that information is actually going to come from your parents' tax returns. And that could be really, really confusing. So again, reach out to us or reach out to those people that are available at your school to help you fill in those boxes that are there that ask you all those questions. There's also this thing called, this thing called the IRS data retrieval tool, which if you put in your parents' information into that website, FAFSA can retrieve all that information and just apply it to there. So I would look into that. I've never personally used it because it wasn't helpful to me, but that option is available. And know that even though you apply as a dependent or you're seen as a dependent on tax returns, you can still file tax returns as an independent. Just a heads up, I didn't know that until like junior year of college.
And then you're going to need to have other non-taxable income, such as like if you are getting food stamps or military benefits or social security income or disability benefits. They're going to need that information too. So just make sure you have that handy. And then any scholarships or any other sources of income that you currently have, just have those available because they'll ask for that too. And then there's this thing called the Title Title V Institution Code. And those are the codes that you're going to need for the schools that you're applying to, because FAFSA is going to ask you which schools do you want to view. Do you want to view your FAFSA application? And that is available within FAFSA. But when you are within the application, it'll send you to it. But it's just better to have ahead of time, so that when the application comes, you're just entering it in. And you could Google it and it'll come up for you. And then before you actually start doing your FAFSA electronically, you'll need a ID, which you can create when you like go into the FAFSA website. But also your parents are going to need an ID because they need to sign your FAFSA application at the end. So important, really important. I used to struggle with that because I was like, I'm not with my parents. But it's electronic. And when you go through the FAFSA application, it'll tell you that is one of the things that is needed. Again, a lot of this information is really overwhelming, especially when you're filling out the application. But I will tell you the good part is when you're applying for the next year, that you can literally copy your previous, not by entering everything in, but FAFSA gives you the application to keep the contents of your previous application into your next year's. So you're not having to fill out the same things unless for some reason there are changes. I never changed mine. It worked out really well for me. However, I filled it out, was able to get me scholarships and funding at my university. So I never really saw a reason to change it except like minor things here and there. And then another thing actually when you're filling out FAFSA is try to get the parent, if your parents are not legally married, try to get the parent that makes the least amount, or I guess the parent that takes care of you the most but is making the least amount, to be the person whose FAFSA information tax information that you retrieve, because the less money your family makes, the more resources that you will have. And there are loans that are available, and FAFSA will give you those resources at the end. They'll send you an email of like, here's what you qualify for and what loans you can take out. I would hold off on the loans until you have went through all the scholarship opportunities that are out there. But that is all that I have. Other people have anything else to add?
I was going to add something that I struggled with over the course of my college years was always forgetting my login information for FAFSA. That includes my PIN, my parents' PIN that I created, because every year you have to submit a FAFSA. So make sure to store that information somewhere safely, whether it's like somewhere on your laptop or written somewhere or on your cell phone or something. So that when you go back into the process, you're not having to recreate a new password or recreate a PIN, I don't know if you could actually recreate a PIN, but yeah, just make sure you have that information stored somewhere. So each year it'll just be natural. You just have to update a few information, not trying to recover your account.
I just filled it out like last week. That happened to me. I forgot my login stuff and my FSA ID and stuff. So I had to renew it. So that's like, yeah, that's important.
Anybody else wanted to add before I move on to scholarships? Okay. So our last topic on the agenda is scholarships, something that you start off college with, but you still kind of have to do as long as you continue going to school. But ideally, you kind of get a grasp of applying to scholarships, finding them when you're first entering college. That way you can get as much school covered and as little debt as possible. So for me, my background with scholarships and colleges and stuff was that in high school, we had a career center, and I actually was the scholarship coordinator there. And so I was helping people find scholarships and that, and like posting them for seniors to apply to. And at the same time, that kind of helped me get a grasp of scholarships myself and kind of give like a firsthand look on what the process looks like. And in that period of time of doing that, but also being a person that was also going through the college application process, I learned a few things about applying to scholarships that I was going to share. The first thing being that you want to start at your school first when it comes to scholarships. So if that's the same for other high schools, we had a career center, and our scholarship, our career center or our school in general has scholarships for seniors. So the easiest scholarships that you can get, first of all, will be the ones from your school. You're a student there. If you're doing well academically and things like that, they will tell you about opportunities locally. So for me, I went to school in one city, and in that city, there's scholarship opportunities that my school was telling me about locally that students from our school were eligible for. So you apply there first because you have a really good shot. There's not as many candidates versus kind of like a national scholarship or statewide, you know. So I started off there in my scholarships search. And then after that, I went to state level. So our state, and I'm sure it varies by state, had something called OSAC, and that provides scholarships opportunities from all over the state. So it could vary, like, you know, some of them varied by what county you're in, some of them varied by what kind of program you're going to, some of them were specific to a university, but they just had so many scholarship opportunities. So you just had to sift through them and find opportunities that were relevant to you and apply. And you just keep applying. Like, the thing about scholarships is that, like, once you have an essay written for it and you have all the other details from when you apply to your first scholarship kind of saved, it's almost just kind of submitting, and then tailoring just a little bit. Because if you already have your letters of recommendation ready as well, then it really is just about applying to as many scholarships as possible. And that's kind of what I did. And once I kind of exhausted the state level, the local, you know, my high school, my city, statewide, then I went to national. And from there, I was able to find scholarships through FastWeb, scholarships.com, College Board, Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, United Negro College Fund, just all these online search engines that kind of gives you opportunities to apply to scholarships, depending on if you're a minority, if you're trying to study a particular field, whatever it is, I try to find it and I applied for it. And then once you know, another big part is once you know what schools that you want to apply to, you have that list ready. Schools themselves will have specific scholarships. Sometimes they're automatic because they're based off your GPA or something. So you might get a presidential scholarship. Great. Some of them you have to apply to. And so you just kind of have to go on their financial aid / scholarship part of their website and just kind of find out, you know, does this have another essay that I need to apply to or use in order for me to apply, whatever it is. You just want to make sure that you know specifically. Sometimes they'll have a, not just a college specific, but they'll have a program specific scholarship. So looking at that is really important because I found out that, you know, when I applied to my university, they also had scholarships for biology majors. And so you can apply there. Some of the scholarships though that are school specific don't really start until you started school there. So for example, if you attend after a year or two, then within the institution themselves, they'll have scholarship opportunities open depending on how well you're doing in school. So they'll be like based off grades and activities that you've done thus far. So don't lose hope that even if you didn't get a scholarship, you know, going into it, there's still opportunities to apply while you're in your program. And I learned that quickly too, because a lot of people just think scholarships are in the beginning of school when you're applying to college and when you're applying to grad school. But while you're in school, there are still scholarships out there. And so I remember applying to a scholarship and thinking, oh, I'm not going to get it, you know. But then I got it and I was like, wait a second, you still give me scholarship when I'm a sophomore in college? Yes, they do. There's a higher chance possibly that you can get those scholarships just because, you know, less people are thinking about scholarships at that point and really just trying to, you know, survive classes or just take loans instead because it's easier. But I say don't give up. So like I said, find things that are specific to your school. Your high school might have opportunities. So really go to your career center, go to your college counselor or just your counselor in general. Those are really big resources for me. Then once you exhaust that, go to your state level. If your state has, you know, scholarship opportunities, do that. Then if you're still looking for money nationally, do that. I got a national scholarship and I just like, this was me just like putting myself out there, not knowing what was going to happen and realizing that there are people that, you know, do look at you and they think you're worthy of money. And so you never know. So don't be intimidated by that either. And then specific to your school. So sometimes they have their own scholarship programs. So make sure that you don't overlook that. And, you know, just like don't lose confidence. Sometimes you think like, who am I to get a scholarship? And sometimes that can intimidate someone from applying, but you never know. It's really easy to just put your application out there. So make sure you just put it out there and then also keep like an Excel sheet or something, just like a record of all the scholarships you applied to, and make sure that you're keeping track of the ones you've gotten and haven't gotten. Because with the national one that I applied to, I forgot about it. Didn't even realize, like I applied to it like June, I think, of senior year, forgot about it. And I didn't even get my award letter until I think September of that year, after I'd already started college, because my college started in August. And I thank goodness that I kept checking my email, because at that point, sometimes you transition to checking your college email account and you don't realize that you could still be getting notifications on the email account you first signed up with. So make sure you keep checking that email account and keeping track of the scholarships you've heard back from, because there could be a scholarship that you're still being considered for, but they just take a little bit longer. Sometimes scholarship application deadlines are really early and sometimes they're later. So just making sure that you're keeping track and looking for them as early as possible and getting the applications in early, but not losing hope if, you know, you've only heard back from a few, because sometimes they don't get back to you until later. And the reality with that is also that like you might not hear back later, but you might have to make your college decision earlier. And so that's just going to be something you'll have to think through and make sure that, hey, at least with the money that I've heard back so far from, can I afford the school? And not really letting that scholarship that you haven't heard back be dependent, letting that control whether you go to a school or not. So yeah. Does anybody have any specific questions or things that you wanted to add in regards to scholarships?
I think the thing I would add about scholarships is apply to all of them. Like, even if you don't think that you qualify, even if you're like a bio major and the application is for people who are in social sciences, apply. Like, you lose nothing from application, especially when you've written your personal statement for college. At this point, you're just essentially copying and pasting. Apply to all of them. When I was in high school transitioning to college, I was really determined not to pay for school. But the scholarships that I received were the ones that
I didn't think I would get because I thought, oh, I don't qualify. But literally the one scholarship that paved my entire way through undergrad was the Ford Family Scholarship, which is for those people who reside in Oregon. And they even provide scholarship options for when you're going into graduate school. I didn't think I would be awarded that scholarship, but I applied anyways and I got it. So apply to anything and everything that you don't think you qualify for. It might say that it's for white people and you're straight up black, apply anyways. Like, even if you think your GPA is too low, apply anyways. You have nothing to lose. It's about your ability to convince the applicant, the people who are reviewing the application. That's it. And in some scenarios, people don't even apply for scholarships. I forgot what the percentage was, but there's a significant amount of money that is out there that is not being used because people are not applying because they feel discouraged or think that they don't qualify. Just apply. Don't even think twice. Apply. I know it's annoying to write those applications, but if that means that you're going to get your school funded, do it. Have your parents help you, have your siblings help you, have anybody help you, even us on Obelity board. Feel free to reach out to us to review your applications. We're here for that. So apply to anything and everything. Use your story. I actually remember when I was in high school, when I was writing my personal statement and applying for scholarships, I told my dad, "Dang, Daddy, I feel really guilty because some of these things I feel like I'm making up." And I remember him telling me, like, don't, because even if you think you're making it up, there is somebody who's experiencing those adverse situations. And you just got to use that to your advantage. It's terrible to say, but it's a business model. I mean, you just got to have them hear what they want to hear. It's not necessarily about just what you experienced only, but it's about what they want to hear. So give them what you got to give them. Apply to all scholarships at every level, no matter what. Like, the only time that I paid for school was in my master's program. And that's because at that point, I was just like, oh, I'm sick and tired of applying, which was a terrible thing. But now I'm in school again, and my school is completely funded for. My bills are paid for. In undergrad, all of my housing, food, everything was paid for. I didn't pay for anything. And it was just about writing a compelling story. It had nothing to do with me, me being extremely smart. It was just writing a compelling story. So, yeah.
Anybody else want to add? Something that I actually forgot to mention when it comes to scholarship searching is an app my friend recently told me about. It's called Scholly, S-C-H-O-L-L-Y. And it's an app that you can download on your phone. You can also use it via, you know, your web browser. But you put in, kind of like other search engines, you put in scholarship or like your personal information, and then they'll find personalized scholarships that you can apply for. Something that's actually nice too is that they will proofread your scholarship essay. I don't know, I've never used it, but I've heard that it works really well and that it helps you find scholarships that you may not have ever heard of. And so that could be an easy thing to kind of just start off with in your scholarship process, is just getting an app, kind of putting yourself out there and seeing what's there, and then from then search some more. So keep that in mind. And this is not just for college, but it's also for graduate school. So like I said, check out Scholly as well. I think a friend of that friend started the app, so they said that it's really good. So who knows, maybe we can get some scholarships that way as well. Does anybody else have anything more to add in regards to this webinar topic in general?
I do. Just to piggyback off of what you said about the app, I was just about to say, like, from when we were in high school and now, I think one of the most biggest changes is that there's more of like a significance in the power of social media. And so for people, whether it's like learning about a certain college or whatever, like now it's kind of easy to get more information. Like, I would recommend just going on Twitter or something and typing in the school that you go to and see what pops up on there, what the students post, what the school itself posts on their stuff, and see what kind of information you can get just by looking them up on like Facebook and Twitter and getting insight on what it's like to go to that school. If there's anything that I would do differently as a high schooler now, that would definitely be on my list.
Yeah, I would also add using social media. So on Twitter or even on Facebook or even Instagram, if you hashtag scholarships and the program you're interested in, hashtag biology scholarships or something like that, those will pop up and they will populate on Twitter especially. A lot of professional organizations or schools or those that offer scholarships post on there and you might not recognize it, but those are posted. And usually the ones that have minimal likes or minimal reshares are the ones where people are not applying. So look for those and apply to those. And also ask, like, I remember there was this organization called ELKS, and I don't know what ELKS stands for, in Oregon, that offers scholarships, and it's a really good amount. And unfortunately, I found out too late to apply for it. But it's like, I think for people elderly, I would say, I'm not entirely sure, but I know ELKS exists in a lot of states. So look into those or look into professional organizations that you might not necessarily think offer opportunities or scholarships, but ask. Also call and ask. Like if you're involved in an organization, call and ask. And even like, credit unions or your wherever you bank, call and ask them if they have opportunities. Credit unions typically have like $1,000 scholarships that you can apply to. So take up those opportunities, and no amount of scholarship is little. Like there are times where I've looked past like $500 or $1,000 or $200 scholarships. I've kind of looked past them, but those things can add up. So don't look past them, apply to them.
Yeah, thank you. Good points. If there's nothing more to add, we can end. Did I hear something? Oh, okay. If there's nothing more to add, then we can end our webinar here. I want to thank everybody for coming. And sharing your insight on all these topics, which are super important when it comes to the college application process. I know for a lot of us, we kind of had to go on it on our own or go through it on our own. So I think it's really nice that we have each other right now to be able to share to people that might not have that person next to them. And so we hope by doing this webinar that you guys as the audience are able to get something out of it, find something helpful, get some of your answers, some of your questions answered. And like we said, please reach out to us if you have some more questions or just need to talk about the process because maybe you're stressed or you just feel alone in it. So don't feel afraid to email us or DM us on any of our social media pages. And we hope to see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on our monthly podcast. If you're interested in learning more about this topic or are interested in leading a conversation, please contact us on our social media outlets. Our handles are at @opalaiti on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat. You can also contact us via our email or our website, which is opalaiti.org. Again, thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you on our next podcast.